What matters? A new phone for Rebecca seemed a timely birthday present. There was already a phone jack in her room, and after he bought the new unit while she was with her mother for the weekend, Nathan tried it out. The strong and immediate dial tone signaled to him that this was a good gift. Until then, they'd shared the one red wall phone in the corner of their small living dining room, and lately, its 25-foot white stretch cord more and more frequently extended across this room into hers, with her door nearly shut. Nathan had to step high to get over it, first one leg, then the other. The new phone, of the color Radio Shack called Almond, enabled Rebecca to close her door tight. After that, he no longer had an undulating hurdle to cross between the television and the refrigerator. The house was very small, with two small bedrooms and a small kitchen. In the bathroom, his knees bumped the wall in front of him when he sat on the toilet. They dispensed with the dining table that had been a fixture of their family life before the divorce, and now most of their meals were eaten sitting on the couch or at a cleared-away space on the end of his long work table. There was no table in the kitchen, only a high, narrow counter and workspace on either side of the stove. The house did have a little porch, which in good weather he liked to think of as another room. In summer, for a few months, he moved the couch out there, plus the main room felt bigger then. Rebecca's bedroom was the larger and nicer of the two. She and her best friend had decorated its walls with cutouts from Esprit catalogs. Nathan bought her some new bookshelves and a new desk. The addition of the phone made the desk look professional. Above it was a bulletin board with school photos of many of her friends, including Josh, who, she said, was her boyfriend. Sometimes he was the caller, and Nathan was bothered by the boy's lack of telephone manners. "Becca there?" a young male voice would ask, with no suggestion that Nathan was anything other than an answering service. Nathan eventually told Rebecca, "You know, it would be nice if your friend would somehow acknowledge that I'm a person who lives here too. Like, please would help a lot. Or, hi, this is whatever his name is. May I speak to Rebecca?" He mentioned this matter to other adults several times within Rebecca's hearing, each time mimicking the boy's voice and clipped question. "Dad," she finally said, "you're embarrassing me." The closed door sealed her off from more than Nathan's overhearing. He considered it natural and right that she dress and undress in privacy, but he didn't deny a curiosity about her developing body. As her legs lengthened her, they and her rear end began to fill out jeans in a different way. Her breasts seemed to be slight swellings that didn't yet require a bra. She generally wore a t-shirt under whatever else she had on. She'd not yet had her maiden period, he didn't think. Instead of admitting Rebecca to a period of gawkishness and imbalance, the junior high years were instead demonstrating new ways for her to be pretty. With those, among other things, came far more attention than ever before to her hair. Nathan was amazed by the amount of time she spent in front of the bathroom mirror and the skinny, full-length one on the inside of her bedroom door, teasing, spraying, adjusting, undoing, restyling. She was quite a beautiful girl, in fact, had been since the evening of her birth, where Nathan was present. He and Phyllis continued to have, as their one thing most in common, tremendous pride in their only offspring's loveliness. Both knew she was better looking than either of themselves. Each issued silent praise for his/her genetic contribution. One night the phone rang, and it was Phyllis. Rebecca answered the wall phone and for a minute responded to her mother's apparently routine questions. But the call this time was for Nathan, Rebecca handed the phone to him and went back to watching Growing Pains. Nathan had been in his room, which was close to the phone, lying on his bed, a pad on the floor, reading. He came out to take the receiver, then stepped back into his room and sat down on the pad. "What's up?" he said. During the years since their separation, Phyllis and Nathan had quite often had long, deep phone conversations, but they'd also evolved a pattern of relating just over the business at hand. Typically, this involved Rebecca's schedule and transportation between their two houses, which were in towns 25 miles apart. "How are you?" said Phyllis, in a tone that both of them recognized as delaying. "Great," he answered. "So great, I'm almost famous. How are you?"
I'm all right. I wanted to talk to you because...
Do you remember the guy who coached Rebecca's soccer team up here? I guess it was 3 years ago. David Wilson?
Yeah.
Well, there's an article in today's paper that says he's been arrested for child molesting.
Jesus.
I mean, it's gross. They charged him with oral copulation, penetration with a foreign object. What the hell kind of person?
There was a kind of armor Nathan had many times felt himself pulling on when he spoke with his former mate and lover. But this time he sensed the shield of another kind descending around him. He asked her a series of factual questions, trying to get from her what the article said and what she did and didn't know. He remembered Wilson, remembered not liking him very much, even though the man seemed to have done a good job coaching, and Rebecca had liked him.
"He used to drive a school bus, didn't he?" Nathan asked.
"Yes, but then he started working at a daycare place."
"How old were the kids he..."
It doesn't say.
"God," Nathan said. "Do you remember Rebecca went to his house one time? He was having the team over for pizza or something."
"Of course I remember that," she exploded. "Nathan, this makes me so..."
"He could have touched her."
"Come on now. It's gross. It's bizarre. But I don't see jumping out to something like that."
"Dad, I need some help with math."
Rebecca had pushed open his door to make this request, which was the beginning of their three times a week routine. He looked up, covered the phone with his hand, and nodded vigorously at her. He used the request to steer the conversation with Phyllis toward a fairly quick end.
"I really don't know anymore," Phyllis said. I just thought you would want to know."
"Yeah, well, I guess I should thank you."
"For what?"
"For telling me."
A few days later, Nathan was sitting by the wall phone with his legs propped up on his work table, reading, but his concentration was interrupted by more news about Wilson. Now the story was in his own town's paper, and it said the man had tried to hang himself in the county jail. Nathan had been wondering what, if anything, he should tell Rebecca. He and Phyllis had reached uncertain agreement to hold off saying anything to her for the time being. But this latest development made the case cry out louder for some kind of action from him as a parent. He told himself he didn't need Phyllis's permission to do anything in his life anymore, but he wondered whether it would only make trouble if he acted alone. He was weighing these considerations when the door opened and Rebecca entered at the end of her walk home from school. Immediately, he could tell that something was affecting her. The way she slouched, the gloomy "hi" she answered him with, the quick retreat behind the closed door of her room. Nathan remembered his own moodiness as a boy, then mocked that memory. "What do you mean, as a boy?" Was it possible Rebecca had heard about Wilson from somebody else? After a while, she came out, turned on the television, then went into the kitchen where she opened her daily can of minestrone and began heating it on the stove.
She brought a bag of sourdough crackers out to eat while she watched the people's court and waited for the soup. Her silence and all her movements underlined the unmistakable message that she was upset. Nathan took notice, but continued to appear to be reading. When she went to the kitchen, he asked her, "What's the matter?"
"Nothing," she said.
"Seems like it must be something," he said, but didn't pursue it. She said nothing as she poured the soup and returned to the couch, balancing the nearly full bowl in her lap without any plate beneath it. For a while longer, Nathan remained silent, but not reading. Even though her back was to him and the television was on, it was amazing how powerful the sensation was which he felt coming from her, the nonverbal message which, he decided, was demanding some response. So he slowly closed the book, got up, walked over to the couch, and sat down.
"Tell me what it is, Beck," he said gently. "I told you it's nothing. But I can tell it must be something."
She continued to stare at the television as she hesitantly began to talk.
"Well, you know how you always tell me when I go to people's houses, like the Burgers or Janie's or Uncle Jeff's house when I go back to Ohio? You say not to be jealous of how big they are and how much stuff they have?"
"Yes."
"Well,"
and now huge tears appeared in her eyes and started flowing down her cheeks.
"Well, I pretty much don't get jealous because I like our house. I mean, it's big enough for the two of us, and I like my room, and I know when I'm up at Mom, it's big enough for you and all."
He got up and snapped off the TV. She was letting go, the tears and the words.
"But, like, I have some new friends that I really like, and I want them to come over, but..."
Nathan felt his heart surge in response to the look of her crying and the hurt in her voice.
"But I'm afraid they'll think our house is so small, and then they won't like me either. And I don't think I should feel that way, but I do, and..."
Some of her tears had reached her lips, and she stopped talking when she swallowed a few of them. A crying of his own had begun inside Nathan, but he felt, through the sadness of understanding her, an amazing radiation of joy. In it were mixed his fatherly pride, open admiration of her, wonder at the mysterious conjunction of things, and his great relief. He moved closer on the couch and put his arm around her and hugged her. Her head slumped against his chest, and Nathan felt there the warmth of her tears.